It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Mix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set. He's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes. Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. It's all presented by Andrew Mark. A very busy football weekend. Hope everybody out there enjoyed the postseason. The New York Giants, obviously, unfortunately, not involved. And the question we posed to the viewers, the listeners, today, Lance, was, did watching the playoff games this weekend change your opinion of the Giants season at all? And the way I look at it is, last weekend, you looked at a lot of those games, a lot of those teams, and you said, boy, it's pretty disappointing the Giants are in these playoffs. They are probably better than a lot of these teams. This week, however, I think you saw some games that were played extremely well. You saw some high-quality NFL action, and the way the Giants were closing out their season were inconsistent, I think it would have been a lot tougher for them to make that sort of run this year.
Well, Giants fans are really interested in this weekend's matchups, mainly because we saw two teams, John, that the Giants beat up in the regular season. That was that Niners-Packers game.
Then again, we also saw two teams the Giants got beat up by in the regular season, the Falcons and the Ravens.
So you had basically two opposite ends of the spectrum in which the Giants matched up well and the Giants struggled against. So, you know, it's still very difficult to get a read on how well the Giants would have done if they were able to get into the playoffs. And keep in mind, you know, outside of those two games against the Packers and the Niners, as we've talked about more often than not on this program, it was a very up-and-down, inconsistent season for the Giants. So you need to take what you can get from those two contests and realize that the Niners and Packers were more consistent teams outside of those two Giants games.
And they're also very different teams. When the Giants played the 49ers, Colin Kaepernick was not yet the starting quarterback. Clearly, he brings a different dynamic to that offense. When they made the move, I questioned it. I questioned it as late as week 16 or 17 of the regular season. But Kaepernick played a great playoff game, did an excellent job. And the running is fine. But I thought he was extremely accurate. I thought he threw some extremely good passes. You know, 15-yard, 20-yard outs. Things like that, that good quarterbacks make those types of throws, and he made those types of throws. And then the Packers have a lot of their defensive players back, whether it's Charles Woodson or Clay Matthews. Greg Jennings back on the offensive side of the ball. And they have some offensive linemen back healthy as well. So both teams a little bit different than when the Giants played them earlier in the season as well.
Though that Packers defense did struggle immensely against Colin Kaepernick.
Struggle. That would be the understatement of the century. They were terrible.
A lot of big passing plays because the middle of the field was wide open at times. And you mentioned Colin Kaepernick's ability to get rid of the football through the air. I thought Michael Crabtree played a great game. Vernon Davis made some catches. Remember,
finally,
he and Kaepernick were unknown to one another in the weeks leading up to the playoffs. And I know you were frustrated from a personal standpoint with respect to your fantasy team. But that's a thing of the past. You're right. I think Kaepernick has matured and he's grown over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, whether or not Alex Smith could have gotten them to this position, who's to say? I mean, Smith certainly gives you that mobility factor, but perhaps Alex Smith had a ceiling, and the ceiling was getting the team to the NFC Championship game. Kaepernick now is in a position to take them one step further and get them to a Super Bowl. And based on what Russell Wilson, John, did to the Atlanta Falcons defense in the second half, if I'm Atlanta right now, I'm a little bit concerned because now back-to-back weeks you're going up against a mobile quarterback who has had success on the ground.
But in my opinion, Russell Wilson didn't have success against the Falcons in the second half because of his mobility. Granted, he avoided the rush a couple times, but he made some throws down the field, 20-yard throws down the middle of the field. And I think Russell Wilson is a bit of a more accomplished thrower than Kaepernick is still at this point.
But Kaepernick is going to have both threats apparent, too, next week, because he'll either throw the football or he'll take off with his legs. So, you know, there are certainly some similarities, and Atlanta's defense played an excellent first half, but, you know, at the end of the day, they got worn down, and they're going to have to make some adjustments because the Niners are certainly not going to make it very easy for them.
All right, I want to get to our phone calls right away, 201-939-4513. Let's go all the way out to California and say good morning to Chase. Chase, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for calling, man. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was wondering about the question on Facebook. Since these two Super Bowl games are pre-Super Bowl games are playing, how do the Giants? My view of the Giants still.
Yeah.
I still think the Giants are a pretty good team, even though they did lose. Because, you know, after those few ending games, they had a tough season. I mean, they just blew it for me. I was listening on the radio, watching it, but I was thinking, Giants, what are you doing? But I think they got tired out over the whole season. I think they got weak, and they needed to step their game up a little bit.
Well, Chase, I guess my question for you, if the Giants did manage to get into the playoffs with 9 wins like they did last season, do you think they would have had it in them with this group this year, considering their health, to make the same type of run they made last year all the way to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think they would. If they would have gotten in, I think they would have had that final, those final few moments of we're going to do this since we're in. Because, I mean, the Giants are a team that don't give up after I'm seeing. They beat the Niners twice, both Super Bowls, and they didn't give up. They were for it all the way in the Super Bowl.
All right, Chase. Well, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
Waking up early in California.
Absolutely. Getting a real early start to join us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And, you know, if the Giants did make it into the playoffs, John, and as Chase alluded to, who knows? You know, they could have become a very dangerous team, could have clicked at the right time. They probably would have got the Seahawks in the first round, and Seattle certainly would have given them a tough test. And after that, you know, depending on who they would have matched up, whether it be the Niners or the Falcons, certainly they've had success against both of those teams, not necessarily Atlanta recently, but in years past. You know the personnel, you've seen some of these teams. Sometimes it's really a crapshoot or a toss-up when it comes to the playoffs. But I think that, you know, based on what the Giants have been able to showcase the last few seasons with their experience, with Eli Manning, the defense having the opportunity to make big-time plays, they certainly would have been in the mix to be in a position to move on to perhaps get back to the NFC Championship
game. They would have been. I agree with you. That being said, and again, we saw it in flashes of points during the season. I'm just not sure, considering the injuries to Keem Nicks, the inconsistencies on the defensive side of the ball. You saw some pretty high-flying offenses over this weekend, whether it was the Patriots, the Falcons, the Seahawks, the Packers, the 49ers even flashed some offense. The Ravens, the Broncos, these teams showed that they could score the football. And I'm just not sure this Giant defense was capable of putting together the type of run they put up last year this season.
And that's a great point, because there would have been a lot of pressure on the Giants' offense to deliver, basically.
Score a lot of points.
To continue that offensive clinic theme.
And could they have, with Akeem Nicks not being 100%?
Obviously, they would need another wide receiver to become more of a consistent weapon once they got to the playoffs, and then that running game would have been a big X factor. Can the running game be consistent enough? Could they have repeated what they did against the Philadelphia Eagles? You know, the one thing watching the contest with the Patriots and the Texans, and we were talking about this before we got on the air, John, New England did a very nice job with Shane Vereen and Ridley matching them one-on-one up against the linebackers, and that reminded me of the Giants-Eagles contest, because David Wilson and Ahmad Bradshaw flourished when they were one-on-one against the Eagles linebackers. So if you scheme correctly and you are able to capitalize on some of those positive matchups, you can have success. That's what they would have needed, the Giants, if they were fortunate enough to get into the postseason.
And I think it also goes back to Wade Phillips being unable to adjust. He plays a lot of blitzes, plays a lot of man-to-man, and as the Patriots took advantage of those man-to-man matchups, were not able to adjust out of that and do some different things. 201-939-4513, our buddy Guy's in New Jersey. Guy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
What's up, Guy? How are you?
From the Timex Center. Very well, thanks. Just a couple of quick points. I think you're dead on. Defense, disappointing at least. I saw Strahan on Letterman the other night, and he basically said he didn't want to be a coach, but he likes being a talk show guy, but would be willing to be a consultant for the defense. Probably not a bad idea, considering where that's coming from, if he can ever get to one coast and not be flying back and forth between L.A. and New York for talk shows. What do you think about that, thought of him coming in and being somewhat of an older mentor to the defense at the appropriate time?
Well, Guy, Jerry Reese did mention that in his postseason press conference, wanting Strahan to come in and really talk to Jason Pierre-Paul specifically, who clearly had some issues this year, struggling once he got all that extra attention from double teams, the chips, all that sort of thing. And he thinks Strahan could be useful to JPP in teaching him how to deal with all that extra attention.
Sure. Do you see continuity here? Every season after a championship, we tend to fall. Do you think it's because of New York? Do you think it's because everyone's doing endorsement deals and beefsteaks and all these other things? Do you think that has a lot to do with this every 4 or 5 years in between championships?
Well, I think each circumstance is a little bit different. The Plexico Burris situation certainly contributed to why they weren't able to repeat the first time. And this year, you know, I don't think it was overconfidence, and I don't think that the team felt that they were just going to breeze through the season because they got off to a great start at 6-2. And I know when we had Mike Garofolo on last week of USA Today, he hinted at the fact, you know, maybe Tom Coughlin needs to make some adjustments in terms of how much he asks of the players from a mental perspective. But that may even be a stretch in its own part.
I agree. I think that is.
I don't know if there were any signs or any trends that you could take away from these two situations where the Giants weren't able to repeat. I think the Plexico Burris situation was a unique circumstance. That certainly played a role. This season, you know, I can't really point to one thing. I think it was just a combination of factors. The fact that injuries played a role. Hakeem Nicks wasn't healthy. The defense had some injuries and some scheme breakdowns. They weren't able to run the ball that effectively. The offensive line struggled in pass protection. I mean, we could sit here. There was a laundry list of factors as to why they did not have a productive second half. I don't think it was a mental thing. I don't think it was a coaching thing. And I don't think the players were just not well prepared. It was just a lot of factors piling up at the wrong time, unfortunately.
Great. Thanks, guys, for taking my call.
You got it, guy.
Thanks
so much
for
weighing in.
Thanks a lot. You know what? It's funny. You really still can't put your finger on one thing, though. Why the Giants were so inconsistent over the course of the year. You know what I mean? It was just a very hard thing to kind of put your finger on. I think that was a question I was asked Tom Coughlin in the postseason press conference. Same thing for Jerry Reese. And no one's really able to put their finger on why this team just couldn't play well. My friends always give me a hard time. We were watching the games on Saturday, and we were talking about who we thought was going to win the individual games. Like, John, you're terrible at picking these games. You work for a team, you get all these games wrong. You stink at this. And I go, I want to tell you guys a little story. I was sitting up there. It was before, I think, the final game of the regular season, and Bob Pop were doing our interview with Tom Coughlin, right? And we were just chatting before we actually did the interview. And we're having a conversation, and he goes, guys, let me tell you something. Coming out of practice the week before the Ravens games and the Falcons game, if you would have asked me how I thought the team was going to play, I would have told you they would have came out and played great games because we had great weeks of practice. We came out, we played terribly. So if the head coach of the New York Giants can't figure out what his team's going to do on any given week, how the heck is anybody from the outside looking in supposed to be able to figure these games out?
And now it's a bit more understandable why you can't get picks right. Wow. Because if the head coach of the New York Giants can't seem to get his finger on the pulse of this team, then it's understandable why you fail to get consistent picks week to week.
Well, you know, I'm not giving anybody any new information. Coach Coughlin said that in his press conferences,
too,
that the team practiced well that week, and he thought they were going to come out and play well. Eli Manning, the players have said the same thing, and they frankly haven't gotten the job done.
And that's why I think that the Hakeem Nicks injury, and it's easy to point to that, John. It's like convenient. Well, your top wide receiver, your best playmaker is hurt. That's why all things fell apart. But when you really put the pieces together, you know, with the attention that Nicks draws, with his ability to block up the field to help the running game, with his ability to help the offensive line, you take him out of the equation. The running game is going to struggle, the pass protection game is going to struggle, and the passing game is going to struggle, and the fact that he doesn't practice week in and week out. So, yes, it's convenient to point to just that one aspect, but when you peel it back and you look from a bigger perspective, that one injury, which happened in minicamp, in OTAs, and just continued all the way through once he got that knee injury, was a big continuous theme. They were able to overcome it at times, but in the big picture overall of the season, very hard to replace your top offensive producer.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Jerry down in Florida. Jerry, good morning, pal.
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
Doing well, Jerry.
Jerry. How about you? What you got?
Okay, I'm doing fine, except that this past weekend, two questions come to mind.
Sure.
The first, do defensive coordinators think that they can stop coaching when their team takes a lead with under a minute to play? And the second question is, can anyone make any sense of Jody Foster's rambling, disjointed acceptance speech last night? It begs the question, what is an Ivy League education really doing for us?
Jerry, I must admit, I did not see Jody Foster's speech. So if you can break it down for me exactly what went down there.
Well, the speech was rambling. It was disjointed. She alluded to the possibility of retiring and then kind of retracted and left it open the air, talked about wanting to have privacy in her life and how important that was, and then suggested that perhaps her whole life she'd been a lesbian and then withdrew from that. And it was so discombobulated that none of it made any sense. Nothing was strung together, and it was just a mess. I couldn't make heads or tails of where she
Jerry,
was going.
Well, Jerry, you know what they say about the Golden Globes? It's a dinner. They serve a lot of alcohol at the Golden Globes, and sometimes when people go up to make their speeches, they might not be all there. You know how that goes.
Well, I would suspect, though, she was prepared because this was an acceptance speech
True.
For an award, the Cecil B. DeMille Award.
Oh, okay.
And she had, and all of these people normally when they do this, they have a theme and they're very well prepared and usually very gracious. This thing was all over the place. I don't know whether anyone else had the same response that I did, but I was sitting there talking to my wife going, what is she talking about?
Now, Jerry, here's the question. How did it compare to some of the political speeches that you analyzed very closely over the last couple of months? Where does it rank there?
Oh, it was just totally lost. Most of the time, you'll notice when you ask a politician a question, he doesn't answer the question you ask him.
Correct.
He answers the question he wants to answer.
True.
And what happened in this case was there was no connection anywhere. You couldn't make any sense with anything.
All right, Jerry, I hear you. What were your takes on the game earlier in the day?
Oh, well, I thought the games, what I saw of the games were pretty exciting. However, I didn't watch it closely because basically I focus on my team, and that's the Giants. And the only comment I would make about that is, and remember I said I thought if the Giants backed into the playoffs, they'd be one and done because there were a couple of key elements that are missing.
Right.
And so I didn't think the Giants would make it very far. But the thing that I would say is, although Belichick is part of the Giant tree, and I'm happy for his success, I have to tell you that emotionally, I'm at the point where this guy is so humorless that I really dislike the idea that I keep seeing New England in the playoffs every year and keep showing up to the Super Bowl, and I would like to see the Ravens win this weekend.
Well, I honestly, Jerry, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it always, my friend. You know, people tend to get tired of seeing the same teams always in the Super Bowl at the end of these seasons, and I think that's where people are right now in terms of the New England Patriots. They, well, frankly, just want to see somebody new in the game, and I guess there's some appeal to having a Harbaugh Super Bowl. That's still in the mix from last year. So, and you know, you actually have three of the four same teams in the championship
Giants
games
the only
that
one missing.
You did last year. So I wonder when the last time that happened. It's probably been quite a long time since you had something like that, considering the turnover in the NFL. But I think Jerry's right. I think for the most part, unless you're a Patriot fan, there aren't that many people going out there rooting for Tom Brady next week.
No, but it's also a sign of how consistent that football team has been. If you want to put them up against the Giants, even though they have tough losses each and every season, the roster changes over, they find a way to get back. And this also relates to the Patriots, our good friend Big Blue Viator, Andrew weighing in on Twitter, questioning how the Patriots seem to overcome injuries each and every season, whereas Hakeem Nicks gets hurt and the Giants weren't able to overcome that injury this season. But keep in mind, when you look at the two Patriots injuries, and they lost Danny Woodhead yesterday and they lost Rob Gronkowski, think about the depth that they have at both of those positions. You know, they've got Aaron Hernandez.
It's pretty good.
So that is not a bad second-tier guy to turn to if you lose your number one tight end. And that's partially because of the fact that they run those double tight end formations. So they need two big-time tight ends to work into their offense. And then with respect to Danny Woodhead, okay, so Danny Woodhead's out of the picture. Well, you still have Shane Vereen. You still have Ridley. You know, you have Wes Welker, who can use sort of in that running back style. There are so many the depth chart of New England, I don't know if there's any other NFL team that can match that depth chart.
Hey, look, and I don't want to get crazy here, and I'm not trying to take a shot at Eli. That's not my point. But Tom Brady's Tom Brady. When you have a guy who might be the best quarterback in the history of the NFL, literally, He could be the best quarterback in the history of the league. And as good as Eli Manning is, he beat him twice in the Super Bowl. In terms of being a consistent player in the regular season, week in, week out, Eli's not there with Tom Brady. He's not quite there. He's just not. And that's no hit on Eli. Again, Tom Brady might be the best ever. Period. Period. So I'm not taking a shot at the Giants quarterback here, but when you have an all-time quarterback like that, there are, you know, it certainly helps.
And another thing with respect to the Patriots as to why they have such good depth and are able to overcome some of these injuries, it also speaks volumes of the development of their rookies. Vereen was a rookie last year.
And the coaching.
So they're moving these players along. Now, the Giants haven't necessarily made bad picks, but sometimes the development process is a little bit slower compared to other NFL franchises.
And honestly, I know we mentioned Belichick. People don't like Belichick. To me, everything goes back to Spygate. Clearly, based on the sanctions put forth by the league, he was, you know, a guy behind, or at least a guy responsible for cheating. And when a guy goes out there and he cheats, you're going to get rooted against, and quite frankly, you should be, because you cheated. But if you talk to him off the field, he was around here a lot when the Giants had their anniversary dinner a couple years ago and all that stuff. Very, very nice guy to talk to off the field, very personable. If you watched the Football Life with Jimmy Johnson when he went fishing with him, that was a very interesting thing. And he's well-liked around the league. He just isn't very good with the media. And, of course, the Spygate thing is a huge black mark on his record.
Well, it's like most people. You have your public view, and then you have what happens behind closed doors. And sometimes it's two different personalities and two different ways that people go about viewing you. Let's go to Jay in D.C. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, you guys. I haven't called in a long time.
No worries, Jay. What's up?
I'm kind of depressed about my Giants. But answer you guys' questions for tomorrow. To be honest with you guys, and I got to tell the truth, I'm a Giants fan. You guys know I love them. But I do not think the Giants were that good this year. I'm speaking as a season as a whole. Not as in certain games, but as a whole.
Yep.
I don't think if they had made the playoffs, they would have went anywhere. Like Jerry said earlier, I think it would have been one and done. And even as I look back to last season, I appreciate the Super Bowl. I love that we won. I'm still going to dinner with my wife off the Super Bowl victory. But even to last year, I did not think the Giants were a great team. Not even a good team. A lot played into our Super Bowl victory last year. If I'm not mistaken, there were no off season last year because they were going through the lockout. A lot of teams didn't have video on JPP. They didn't have video on Victor Cruz. But then when the next year came around, when they actually had tape on these guys, it showed.
Good point.
And the inconsistency that was last year traveled over to this year. And a lot of folks, like I say, when last year when O.C. Umeyora came back, you know, it sparked it. No, it didn't spark anything. It was as a group, as a team, they all got it together and clicked. Because as you saw, when Kenny Phillips came back, when we lost someone this year, they came back, nothing happened. Kenny came back after 6 weeks, nothing changed, nothing happened. So I just think that the Giants' heads were not there this year.
Well, I think
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think you bring up a great point with respect to Victor Cruz and Jason Pierre-Paul, and I had touched on this earlier in the season. You know, those are the two new kids on the block, and you're right. There's not a lot of film. There's not a lot of them in the archives, and they're able to take advantage of that one season. Now, all of a sudden, you start to see the double teams the following season. What are you doing as an individual talent?
Right.
Forget the scheme to adjust to those new double teams that you're seeing, and how are you overcoming those circumstances? And I don't think all of the players as a whole did a good job of overcoming those obstacles this season. Yeah.
And I agree with you guys. I was telling folks even last season, all NFL teams deal with the lockout. They had no offseason. They had no training camp. So a lot of things played into the Giants' part, even though I know the Giants didn't have one either. But still, a lot of teams, like I just said, didn't have tape on a lot of the players we had. So it was kind of a strange. They didn't know how to scheme for them guys. This year came in, they had the tape. What happened? You know, it's like we got exposed. It's like everybody knew what the Giants were thinking. And I don't know. I just hope that next year, the season coming up, that they train harder, they get it fixed. I don't think we need to change any coaches. I don't think we need to change any coordinators. I love all the guys. I just think the guys have to focus harder this year.
Hey, Jay, and I think
you're
100% right.
Hey, Jay,
thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And I think two things happened. One is what Jay said is 100%. I think you saw some quote-unquote, I know it wasn't necessarily their sophomore year, but you saw some sophomore slumps from guys where the league adjusted to them. Now it's their turn to adjust back, like Jay mentioned, Cruz, and, of course, JPP. I also think maybe some of the older guys got a year older and maybe not quite as good as they were a year prior. whether you're talking about the Corey Websters of the world, players like that. Ahmad Bradshaw, more banged up this year than he was the year before with that knee. Hakeem Nicks, again, wasn't the same player because of an injury. So age, injuries, growing up as a player, all part of the game in, year out. So I think all those things probably are part of it.
And OCU Manure coming back, what Jay was alluding to, how it can't just be on him that saved the Giants' defense. And he's right. Everybody basically was able to capitalize off of his return because OC brings the pass rush on one side, so JPP's not seeing as much of it, the attention that he had seen in prior seasons. It all comes together at the right time. That wasn't necessarily evident this season.
And you saw the secondary play a lot better that year, the final six games. And does that have partly to do with the pass rush? Sure, because the quarterback has less time to throw it, obviously. But I think the secondary just also got their act together and played a lot better. You know what I mean?
Let's go back to the lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. This guy's name is Tough Bricks. Do I have that right, Dave?
Tough Bricks.
Tough Bricks in Pennsylvania. Tough Bricks, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's up, Tough Bricks?
Hey, I'm doing all right, man. Hey, I like the guy, Jay, what he said a few minutes ago. It was cool. Big thing about this season that really, you know, it puzzled me, and I seen Tom Coughlin in the pressers, you know, saying what he had to say, and it really, you know, had me, like, why doesn't he know? And I'm sitting here going, well, he's the coach of the New York football Giants, my Giants, our Giants. I didn't understand why he didn't understand what was going on. The reason why last year we won that Super Bowl and the year prior to that and in all the years prior to all those Super Bowls is because we had field generals on the field. Okay?
Well, you're talking about a leadership perspective?
I'm talking about a leadership. I'm talking about a true leadership. I'm talking about a straight-hand leadership. I'm talking about when Brandon Jacobs and Justin Tuck were field generals. When you thought about the Giants, you thought about toughness. Offensively and defensively.
Well, you know what? Tough Bricks, I hear you, but the only guy that really left from last year to this year was Jacobs. Deion Grant, I get it. He was a leader, but I'm not sure if he's necessarily bringing a toughness factor to that defense. To me, Roll is much more of a leader on that defense than Grant is.
He was. Yes, Antro Roll is a leader, but when you think about, when you looked at how Deion Grant was, and how because he was a 10-year veteran, plus, and that Antro Roll was a veteran, and they had just had that it was like a general slash lieutenant slash, it just went down the line where it was nothing out of place in these Super Bowls, especially when you had Strahan and like Antonio Pierce. You had a field general, and you had somebody in the second tier like a lieutenant that was, you know, delegating his authority to the other players, and everybody was in line. You know, when it was time to buckle up and be a tough team, that's what their mental toughness was. This is why they were able to go 9-7 and go win the whole thing, because mentally, Brandon Jacobs, Justin Tuck, those guys, yeah, they're tough, but they needed that extra, the extra mouth in the huddle to get these guys going. That's all. I think that's all what we were missing this year, that general toughness. And I think Strahan teaching JPP, I'm getting this report. I don't know if this is true or not, but the JPP being taught by Strahan, I think it's a great thing for him, because think about it. During the season, when Strahan came to Giants organization, he studied film with them guys. Them guys actually played a little bit better having somebody like that coming in, teaching them a couple little things. And they played a little bit better. I'm not saying it lasted, but you can see after when he showed them what was going on with the football, they actually were a little bit better. But, you know, it didn't last. So.
Yeah, you know what, Tough Bricks, I hear you. And I think take one other thing out of Jerry Reese's postseason press conference. When he said a lot of the key to beating those double teams, that extra attention for JPP, is inside his chest. It's heart. Exactly.
Right.
You gotta.
That's right.
You have to deal with the disappointment. Deal with fact that these guys are doing all this stuff to stop you. But keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
Keep coming. Don't discouraged.
Right.
And Strahan was so good at doing that. And that's something JPP, I think, could pick up from him.
Mm-hmm. I just believe that Strahan. You know, I miss that guy, man. I miss him a lot. Yeah, I miss him a lot, but, you know, I've been a Giants fan my whole life. And I just want to, you know, I just want to harp in on that today. You know, I just think that we just do Tom Coughlin. I'm just going to tell Tom Coughlin on the radio right now that all you need is to get your field generals, make them back, bring your field generals back. Whoever you got to go get a field general. That's no nonsense. That bring that back, and I guarantee you we'll be back in there this year playing home in our own Super Bowl. That's all I got to say.
All right, Tough Bricks. Tough Bricks. Thanks so much.
Tough Bricks going the military route, so yes. You have, like, Tom Coughlin as, like, the chief of staff or, like, the secretary of defense, you know, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, something like that, and he wants to have his, you know, little hierarchy behind him. He used to have the leadership council. He kind of phased that out a little bit. So he thinks it's more of a leadership issue. And I guess when you look at consistency, I could see why you think it might have something to do with the leadership issue, why these guys, quote-unquote, didn't look ready to play and just didn't execute well week in, week out. Can you put that on one or two guys being leaders, or does that go to simply the individual players playing better? Does one have to do with the other?
I think it's more of the individual players just having to play better, because you talked about Antrell Roll. I thought he was very vocal throughout the course of the season.
Got to get some dog, man.
He never shies away from calling out his teammates.
No, he does not.
So you got to give that to him. And plus, you know, Tough Bricks brought up the fact that they lost Brandon Jacobs. What about Ahmad Bradshaw? Ahmad Bradshaw, remember that Browns game? You know, wanting the football, winds up finishing with 200 yards rushing.
Whacking Victor Cruz in the head.
Is that not enough of a statement? I mean, I thought he showed some firepower and showed some chippiness, as we like to refer to it here on this show.
He did.
And I think his teammates feed off of that to a certain degree. Was it as evident late in the season as it was earlier in the season? Perhaps not, given the fact that the injuries started to take a toll on him. But I think they have vocal leaders here. I don't necessarily think that they need to go out and look for a guy that is just going to be a presence in the locker room. Plus, they have some financial constraints that may prevent them from bringing in a player like that. But I do like the fact, and I know Guy touched on this earlier in the show, and Tough Bricks piggybacking off of it, if Strahan has some flexibility in his schedule and can take on that consulting type of role, it doesn't hurt to get another player's perspective. I'm not saying it's going to be the end-all difference maker, but it doesn't hurt for JPP to hear it from a guy that was out there each and every down, knows what it's like to make adjustments, and succeed in doing that.
Strahan films his show every morning 8 blocks from my apartment in New York. If he wants to come here and talk to JPP, he'll do it. There's no fitting into the schedule nonsense. I know JPP probably
Goes to California
here
for the Fox show.
Well, he does go to – well, it's on the weekend. He's here every weekday doing this. Granted, I don't know where JPP necessarily is over the course of the offseason. He'll be back here in April. So if sometime in April and JPP gets back here for the strength of the conditioning program, I'm sure him and Strahan will find some time to meet up, and Strahan can talk to everybody on that defensive line too. Can't hurt. You know, talk to them, get their heads together a little bit.
And here's another thing. Maybe I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate against myself. You do have O.C. Umenyor and Justin Tuck on this roster, and it's not as if these guys haven't been there and done that.
The O.C. might not be on this roster this year.
No, but I'm talking about throughout the course of this season.
True.
They had the experience factor. They could have taken Jason Pierre-Paul by the side and said, you know what? You have to expect and anticipate these things
especially
to come
O.C.
your way.
Who's no. faced double teams his entire career.
And that wasn't too evident throughout the course of this season.
Well, just because we don't see it doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't happen either.
But clearly adjustments weren't made. Whether or not it was being delivered or the message was received, you know, we can read into that all we want.
Then again, JPP dealt with, was dealing with a back injury, too, the last half of the year. Who knows how serious that was. He ended up being almost a game-time decision when we had that back injury. Ended up not missing any games, played through it, but you don't necessarily know how that affected his performance either. And again, I'm not an excuse guy. I'm not trying to give the Giants excuses or JPP excuses. He did not play well this year, but you never know how that does affect his performance.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go back to lines. Bill in Cincinnati. Bill, welcome to the program. What's happening?
Good morning, guys. Just was curious about what you think's going to happen with Rocky Bernard. I know he's been a pretty productive member of the Giants the last, maybe 2 years, but it seems like he kind of fell off this year, and I'm wondering if you think he'll be back next year or what his status is, because, I think the Giants need to kind of upgrade at that position, but, who knows what else is out there.
Well, I'm going to turn back the clock a little bit. If Rocky Bernard does end up coming back, it's probably not going to be until just before training camp. Remember, this past year, they didn't bring him back until very late in the offseason program, because, quite frankly, I don't think Rocky was that interested in doing an off-season strength and conditioning program, so he didn't want to sign that contract until later in the off-season. But in my opinion, I think the Giants want to go with the younger guys they have on the roster to fill out that defensive tackle spot. I think next year they'll be pretty comfortable going to war with Canty, another year off that knee injury. He should be a lot healthier next year and be better. Linval Joseph continues to improve. He's been a very solid to good to very good at times this year defensive tackle. Then you have Marvin Austin, who has to finally do something as a second-round pick heading into his third year. And then, of course, you have Marcus Kuhn coming off that knee injury. So you have four guys that I think the Giants are pretty happy with at defensive tackle. I'd be surprised if Rocky Bernard is back. I think they'd rather use that money elsewhere, whether it's re-signing a Kevin Booth or Will Beatty, or maybe bringing in a free agent offensive lineman or a free agent linebacker from the outside.
Got it. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Hey,
you got
it, Bill.
Thanks so much. Rocky Bernard was viewed as sort of an insurance policy security blanket. Remember, they were going to rely on Sean Rogers, and unfortunately the blood clot and some injuries in the offseason prevented him from being a contributor.
Forgot about that. Good point.
Deion Grant was in that conversation too. Had there been an injury to a safety, they were contemplating whether or not to bring him back, but clearly they want to go younger. As you mentioned, John, you got to groom for the future here. Bringing in these veterans who maybe have 1 or 2 years left in the tank is not going to help you in the long run. You need to start building up for seasons upcoming.
Well, in this past season, to remember, you don't know how Chris Canty's going to return from what ended up being and was finally revealed late in the year was very serious knee surgery in last year's offseason. You didn't know how Marvin Austin was going to come back from that torn triceps, and he ended up not being a contributor this year. And frankly, what can you expect out of a guy like Marcus Kuhn, who's a seventh-round draft pick, 26 years old, from Germany? I mean, who knows what this guy's going to give you? So the only sure thing the Giants were really looking at last year at defensive tackle was Linval Joseph. So it made sense to bring back Rocky Bernard as an insurance policy. It made sense to sign Rogers as an insurance policy. But it turns out this year, I think you know more about some of these younger players. Canty will be healthier. I think you can go with that core group and kind of figure it out from there.
Now, having Canty at Akeem Nicks at least close to 100% entering mini camps, OTAs, and training camp this season could really help in setting the tone a lot differently for the season upcoming compared to this year. Let's go back to the lines. We got Frank in Long Island. Frank, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well, Frank. How about you?
Good. I was just listening to what you had to say about the defensive line, and I pretty much agree with everything that you said, but I just wanted to add that I think that Kiwanuka would help a lot of the other defensive linemen if he came back as a defensive end, maybe put Tuck at least once in a while at the tackle position, because before he was moved to linebacker, if everybody remembers, he had a neck injury. And before that happened that year, he was considered basically the best defensive player that the Giants had that year, and he was really coming on.
Frank, in my humble opinion, and I don't know anything, and I do not think we'll see Mathias Kiwanuka linebacker anymore in his time with the Giants.
Oh, you think he's going to cut ties with them?
No. I think he's going to be a defensive lineman. I think he'll be primarily a defensive end.
Right, okay. That sounds good. I think that will help a lot. And I think the offense, I don't know, towards the end of the year, it seems like Eli and company, I know Hakeem Nicks was hurt, but they seem to lose confidence. I mean, even early in his career, I'm speaking of Eli, when he was even more inconsistent than he is now, he always seemed to have, like, that clutch plays, you know, towards the end of the year, towards the end of the game. Even if they weren't doing good throughout the game, they always seemed to come through or, you know, almost. You know, but towards the end of this year, they just didn't seem there was something wrong. Like, you know, I don't know what it was exactly, but maybe it was a little bit of the plays studying from other teams, a little bit of Hakeem Nicks, and a little bit of confidence. But, you know, I think they could bounce back next year.
All right, Frank, thanks so much for weighing in. And I agree with Frank. I think it was a combination of factors as to why they didn't have that comeback kid mentality throughout the latter part of the season. It was clearly partially on Eli Manning. Some of the decisions that he made wound up costing the team, and partially some of the factors that we threw out earlier in the show. The offensive line, the pass protection wasn't nearly as consistent as it was. Remember, Manning took a fair share of hits in the latter parts of these games against the Falcons and the Ravens, most notably, that he wasn't seeing necessarily earlier in the season. In the running game, pass protection, that also is a big contributing factor. And the wide receivers, you know, guys need to make plays. It's not just on the quarterback. If Manning throws you the football, you've got to be able to haul it in. And I think that there was a little bit of inconsistency with Akeem Nicks not 100% and Victor Cruz seeing double teams, that third receiver, you had some flashes from Reuben Randle. You had some flashes from Dominic Hixon. You had a game or two from Ramsey's Barden, but you didn't necessarily have that one guy week to week that brought his A game, and you knew you could rely on him getting anywhere from five catches to 60 to 70 yards. I don't think that was necessarily evident. And Martellus Bennett could have been a guy that I think they turned to, but you know, sometimes Manning would not look his way. I think Bennett progressed as the season went along, and perhaps if they decide to bring him back, he can become that consistent third option this season. We've got a question on Twitter, at MFarmer20, Mike Farmer weighing in, about Sean Rogers, who we brought up earlier. Can Sean Rogers return? Have always been a fan of his, was pumped to see him on the team before his injury. Now, Rogers is a free agent, so it's not a matter of can the Giants bring him back. If they want him back, they got to sign him.
Assuming he's medically okay, which I'm not that familiar with his current medical situation, to be honest with you.
I mean, it happened very early in the season, and let's put it from this perspective. If it wasn't serious, they probably would have maybe not put him on IR so quickly and kept him around thinking maybe we can activate him in week 12 or week 13 and he could help us give us a playoff push. The fact that they didn't do that meant that clearly it was a little bit more severe than most people anticipated. You're right. Can he get back on the field for a mini camp or an OTA to show them something?
And a guy of that age and, quite frankly, of that size, missing an entire football season, you wonder, and it wasn't even a physical injury. It was, you know, it was an illness situation, an internal medicine situation. How well can he come back from that after not playing football for an entire year?
I mean, he had to use blood thinners just to, you know, get back to 100%. And the other thing that Tom Coughlin even touched on a lot throughout the course of training camp was, you know, Sean Rogers needs to bring the weight down. We want to see him get in better shape so that we can rely on him in certain schemes, in certain situations. I don't know if he showed that even before the blood clot situation arose. So that's going to be something that they're going to have to determine from a health perspective and a financial perspective if indeed they want to bring him back into the mix. We go back to lines, our very good friend Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Good morning, Len.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Well, Len.
You know, just a couple of things that came up you guys were talking about with some of the other fans. You know, on the Sean Rogers deal, you know, the Giants over years, you know, for decades, have been known for really taking care of their players. Anybody who puts on that jersey, even in training camp and gets hurt, the Giants seem to really work overtime to take care of a guy. And, you know, with Rogers, this may simply be a case of, I think this is good news, by the way, the fact that they put him on IR, because they could have very easily gone to an injury settlement with the guy. So maybe they think there's a chance that Sean Rogers can get back on the field. And there is a reason why they signed him. I mean, I think, you know, before the first practices of the year, they understood they had problems at defensive tackle. And they were going to have a problem stopping the run. And they needed a big body in the middle. And Sean was that kind of guy. I want to say something about the Strahan thing, if you will allow me.
Sure.
And I hope you'll continue to take my calls after I make this statement.
Oh, boy.
if Michael needs a ride to Canton, I'll volunteer. I'm a big fan. I hope he goes in on a first ballot. But if I'm a Giants player, here's what I want to say to Michael. Stay out of my locker room. Stay out of my locker room. We'll take care of business. That's what I want to hear from the Giants. And I'm really a little disappointed in Jerry going public with that statement. I just think, you know, let the players take care of business inside that locker room. I think there are some smart guys in there who understand better than all of us what the heck happened and that they're going to take care of business next year. Hey, just a couple of quick observations on the games, if you'll allow me.
Yeah.
That up-tempo offense by New England is really impressive.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I mean, particularly when they get down near the goal line, that one instance where, I mean, you know, they couldn't even get the players on the field, and here's New England running a play and scoring a touchdown. And, again, the need for three running backs, and New England proved it yesterday. And I think we got three running backs. I think we could have been in that situation.
Agree.
Now, if pressed, we got three guys who can play. And, you know, that right tackle, Volma, is a free agent. Offensive right tackle is a free agent. I'm hoping Brewer's the guy. I think you know that. I'm hoping Brewer's the guy, and we don't have to go out on the street and pick up a free agent here. Of course, we'll probably have to overpay. But Volmer did a pretty good job yesterday on J.J. Watt.
He did.
J.J. Watt is good. And Volmer played a pretty nice game. You know, hats off to Tony Gonzalez.
I was happy for him.
Just a great player. I mean, you know the ball's going to Gonzalez. You just know the ball is going to Gonzalez. And they see, and he still makes the catch. I mean, just a great, great player. Maybe in context, maybe Corey Webster wasn't that bad in his coverage against Torrey Smith. I mean, the 10-time Pro Bowler got burned.
Champ Bailey, yeah,
yesterday.
Great point.
Champ Bailey. Champ, I mean, you know, maybe Corey did have that bad a game. It'll be interesting to see how New England handles the, you know, the right hand. Flacco throws to the right a lot. It'll be interesting to see whether they go one-on-one with Torrey or whether they, you know, shade a safety over to that side. Green Bay better get an offensive line or
yep.
Rodgers isn't going to have a very long career.
Agreed. Yep.
And I guess what impressed me the most, maybe I'm putting this in context with the Giants too, overall from the eight teams, the aggressiveness on defense, just a pleasure to watch. Hey, thanks, guys.
You got it, Len. Thanks so much.
Talk to you.
And I think he pretty much hit all those points out of the ballpark.
I really like his point about Corey Webster, because the theme of today's show was how do you view the Giants now that you've seen a couple of playoff games. And I'm not excusing Corey Webster's performance this season, but it's interesting to now look at a Pro Bowl caliber corner
all-time
struggle.
All-time great corner, by the way. Not the same player it used to be. We get that. But Torrey Smith has made a lot of people look bad this year.
Champ Bailey is known as a shutdown guy. When you have a conversation about corners that you know can take wide receivers out of contests, you know, we hear about Darrell Revis and Revis Island. Champ Bailey is certainly in that mix. There was a point in that Ravens game on Saturday where he was 10 to 15 yards off the line of scrimmage and basically was telling Torrey Smith, you can have your first down. I'm just not going to get beat deep by you.
Champ Bailey was physically dominated in the first quarter of that game. Torrey Smith looked too big. He looked too fast. And you're right. At one point, Bailey just said, you know what? I can't play my normal game and hang with this guy. He's too good. So I'm going to play off. I'm going to make sure the ball's in front of me. Now, if the Broncos would have taken that position from the start of the game and carried it into the end of the second quarter and perhaps the end of the fourth quarter, they might have won that contest. But they let Torrey Smith get behind them. And that's how the Ravens want to beat you. They want to beat you with the big plays. If you make Joe Flacco sustain drives down the field, complete a number of passes to get first downs, I don't think they're going to score a ton of points on you unless you let them run the ball all game long, which they can do. They're good running the football. The Broncos gave up those big plays at the end of the first half and at the end of the fourth quarter, and that's what really sunk them.
And he nearly had a third touchdown when Flacco overthrew Torrey Smith.
Yep.
I mean, Smith was really having a field day in open space down the field, and that was a big reason why they were in position to knock off the Denver Broncos. I mean, there were games where Torrey Smith this season was a non-factor. As a result, the Ravens struggled offensively. The games that he flourished, Ravens were in a position to win, or they wound up winning that contest. So clearly, he was a huge difference maker. The other thing that Len touched on, and I know we could sit here and speculate over a lot of different free agents, but he did throw out the name Sebastian Vollmer, who is the tackle for the New England Patriots. I was actually looking up what his contract situation was in the event that the Giants did want to experiment. In 2009, he signed a four-year deal worth just over $3 million. Now, this past season, he earned $650,000 and then had a workout bonus of $25,000. He is a free agent, unrestricted, not restricted, so it's not as if the Patriots have the ability to immediately match. And there are certainly a number of other offensive linemen. I don't necessarily have a list right in front of me, and
something
Vollmer's been in a good system the last couple of years.
Tells me if he does a good job of protecting Tom Brady, the Patriots will probably bring him back.
I think that would be a good guess. That's you really going out on a limb there.
Yes. I mean, if the Giants had a good offensive lineman that could protect Eli Manning, would they let him go? I don't think so. So unless the Giants can blow him out of the water with a huge contract that the Patriots can't match, which financially is unlikely.
Maybe a stretch.
I don't think you're going to have a problem. One other thing this year, by the way, Lance, I want to bring up. One, I picked up this nugget late last Friday talking to a couple people. And one huge difference between last year and this year with the Giants is Eli Manning's fourth quarter play. As you well know, the year the Giants won the Super Bowl, 2011, Eli Manning had one of the best fourth quarter seasons in the history of the league. He threw for 1,700 yards, had 66% completion percentage, 15 touchdowns and 6 interceptions for 110 quarterback rating in fourth quarters. One of the best in the history of the league in the fourth quarter. This year, he only completed 54% of his passes, worse out of any one of his quarters. He only threw for 760 yards. That is about 40% of the yards he had last year in the fourth quarter. Worst, by the way, of any one of his four quarters of play. Averaged only 7.2 yards per, I believe that's per attempt. Last year he was at 9.4. And again, that 7.2 is the lowest of any quarter over the course of the year. He threw 8 touchdowns and 3 interceptions for a 90 quarterback rating. So his diminished play in the fourth quarter, and you knew last year was an anomaly. There's no way you can repeat that type of performance. But Eli simply was not that man possessed in the fourth quarter this year that he was the year before. And remember back to 2011, the Giants had so many close games where Eli worked his magic and won them games in the fourth quarter. That magic simply was not as apparent this year. For whatever reason.
Yeah, they had the ability to rally. Look at that Cowboys game last season. I'm talking about the meeting in Dallas where they're down 2 touchdowns late in the fourth quarter. Manning gets 2 scores. JPP, the block field goal. Giants fans know the rest. And the Arizona Cardinals game was another rally earlier in the season. There were multiple examples where Manning raised his game in the fourth quarter. But it gets back to the point, John, as good as Eli Manning was in the fourth quarter last year, it had a lot to do with the talent around him. Guys need to make plays. You know, the quarterback can only do so much. And I think that's the biggest difference when you hold up 2011 against 2012. The other stat that probably we could throw out is the big game-changing type of plays, the 60 to 70-yard bombs down the field that were evident in 2011 and that were missing in 2012. You know, that was another wrinkle of the offense that seemed to all of a sudden disappear. And they had that in 2011.
That isn't a wrinkle. That's a big part of the offense. That's not a wrinkle. Everyone's trying to get big plays. If you don't get as many big plays, you're simply not going to have the same amount of success. 201-939-4513. Let's go to our good buddy Vic up in Connecticut. Vic, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
How are we doing, Vic?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well.
Hey, I think someplace in the United States, Corey Webster's probably got a big grin on his face.
Well said.
He's vindicated, I think, at least for this year. Just a couple comments that I have. The question that was initially posed on the show, the Giants probably would not have competed very well yesterday from what I saw. I think the Pats and the Ravens are just right now a real superior team on that side. Now, on the other side, with San Francisco and Green Bay and Atlanta, something strikes me that the Giants are in San Francisco and Green Bay's head a little bit lately. So who knows what could have happened if they had made it into the tournament. They might have got by somebody, played one of them, and who knows where they would have went from there. So one thing that was puzzling to me was the no-huddle offense that the Pats run. I'm not talking about the no-huddle that they historically run all the time, but that quick snap when they felt like they had the defense offside. And I was wondering when Wade Phillips was going to wake up and tell his guys on the sidelines, you know, they're going to quick snap you. Down on the goal line stuff. And it's surprising for a guy of his stature to not make an adjustment because it happened 3 or 4 times. So I thought that was a little strange.
I think the Texans, Vic, despite their good record during the course of the year, has to take a long look at themselves in the offseason here to prevent what seems to be an eventual downslide here based on how they play the second half of the year.
They feel kind of like bridesmaids to me. Bridesmaids. Maybe someone who walks down the aisle. Flower girl, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, maybe not even that good. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. But
Ring bearer, perhaps?
I could go elsewhere, but I won't.
Okay, yeah. Very good.
Right. We won't go that direction.
just one thing before my question. I am praying that the Patriots do not make it to the Super Bowl. I mean, I think they're talented. You know, I think Tom Brady's terrific. But I live in Connecticut, as you know, and
yep.
I'm right on the border of Patriot country and Giants country. As you move south in Connecticut, you know, you become more Giants. But as you move to the east of Hartford, you become more Patriots fans. And, you know, when you walk into the stores in Connecticut, the Patriots stuff is always proudly displayed at the beginning. And then I have to find the Giants stuff, which I conveniently kind of relocate when I go into the stores. But don't tell anybody that.
Nice.
But anyway, so I'm just kind of hoping that they don't win simply because I think I'm a little bit tired of them too. But the question I wanted to ask you guys was on the salary cap, because you talked a little bit about it on Friday, and it got mentioned today. The Giants historically, or at least over the last 3 or 4 years or so, seem to be uptight against the cap. I think they're at like 116 or whatever. I looked at Fox Sports too.
Yeah, Vic, I believe based on something Ralph Vacchiano wrote last week, they are about $4 million under the cap as we speak today.
Yeah, which would put him at about 116, right, with a $120 million cap.
I believe. I think that sounds about right.
So my concern is that they seem to be bumping up against the cap. And I don't know if it's the way they structure versus the Patriots, but I'm just going to use the Patriots because they're fresh in my mind. I think they're somewhere in the high nines, 96, 7, 8 million. And I'm wondering why it seems like they manage their cap differently. They can bring in some of these, the cornerback that they brought in, Talib, whatever his name is
right.
there.
And
they
yeah,
brought
Caleb,
in some
yeah.
other guys. And the Giants don't seem to have that ability. They're always looking to re-sign their own, which is not a bad thing. So I guess the short question is why do you think they're always close to the cap and there's some teams that seem to always be able to bring in some free agents if they feel like doing it?
Well, Vic, I would say it's cyclical. If you go back a few years, if you go back 3 years ago, the Giants and Patriots are in opposite situations. If you remember, the Patriots constantly had to let people go on the defensive side of the ball that they thought were pretty good players because they were up against the salary cap. Remember the trade with the Oakland Raiders.
Richard Seymour
had salary cap implications. Offensively, they've had to let go wide receivers. Deion Branch walked away, signed that big contract with Seattle, for example. They've had to make some sacrifices to Patriots. And just 3 years ago, remember, the Giants had a lot of cap space. They were able to bring in Rocky Bernard, Ontrell Roll, Chris Canty, spend money outside Michael Boley, spend money outside the organization to bring these guys in. Now, yeah, the Giants are always up against the cap. Most, if not all, NFL teams generally are, except for the really bad ones. Now, it could be a lot worse for the Giants, too. Dallas Cowboys this year, $16 million over the cap. The Jets, $18 to $20 million over the cap. They're going to have to cut guys just to get under or restructure contracts. Now, the Giants, are they going to be able to go out there and sign, you know, a big-name free agent unless they cut a serious amount of guys? No, probably not. But they do have the flexibility here to maybe bring in a free agent here or there, even if they're not the big guys, and re-sign their own free agents. So the Giants aren't in the worst situation. Are they in the best spot? No. But I think they're in a better spot than a lot of teams out there are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, those are always really all real great points, and I do appreciate that. And you're right. I think the Giants always position themselves not to be in the best position or the worst position. They're always put themselves in a good conservative position to succeed, which is why the Giants do succeed and are what they are. So thanks for your comments. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Vic.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Look, the Giants are a win-now team, so you're not going to purposely conserve or save cap space to have this big off-season signing. You know, if it works out that way, that's great. But the point here is to field a team that can challenge for the Super Bowl every single year. So if you have cap space, you're going to use it. You just don't want to have it sit there year in, year out and not use it. I'm not saying use it poorly, but there's always enough quality talent out there where you can find a way to use that cap space in a wise way.
Especially because it helps you build up the depth chart, and that's clearly what the Giants need based on the injuries that they've suffered. And it gets back to the point that you brought up, John. You'd be very hard-pressed to find a lot of teams around the league that have such a huge gap come the end of the season where they have about $20 to $30 million to go out and just spend and try to outcompete the rest of the competition.
It's all a matter of having, you know, big-time contracts expire. That'll free up some of that space, which happens from time to time.
But once every 4 or 5 years that happens.
Or if you're a team like the Jaguars who can't get people in their building and can't spend money because they don't have it, and then they're going to have cap space.
Or if you're a team that can't hire a new GM like another team that calls this city their home.
Salary cap hell would be the phrase used to describe that.
Yes. Where you need somebody to help you make sense of some of the financial issues that the Jets are facing right now. So, you know, the fact that the Giants were talking about $5 million of wiggle room, clearly they need to get more wiggle room by restructuring some contracts, which every team has to do each and every season. You know, the franchise tag comes into play, all of these other salary cap weapons that I like to call them that you can utilize to maybe keep a player or free up some money. The Giants will utilize those things as best as they can. But the priority is you want to also re-sign the guys that you've invested a lot of time and money in already. So I think that's their first priority before they even start to experiment or toy with the idea that they're going to go out and go after a big name.
Salary cap weapons. I like that.
Well, you know, you have a couple of different tools. Maybe that's a better term that I should throw out.
No, stick with weapons.
That you can utilize.
I like weapons.
Yeah. Well, listen, the franchise tag is useful for some teams, especially if you're about to lose a player that you don't want to see walk. You can hold on to him for an extra year. I mean, look at Drew Brees and the Saints. You know,
Anthony
they couldn't
Spencer,
work out a contract. Exactly.
The Cowboys.
There's perfect examples. And I'm not saying that the Giants are known for using that, but if you have it, there's no harm in using it if you need to go to that resort.
So you would qualify the franchise tag as like the like B2 stealth bomber? Maybe
if
howitzer,
you want to categorize
perhaps,
it
something like that?
In that circumstance, in that situation. I mean, like I said, weapons is not the best thing we want to start comparing right now to football maneuvers. But if we have to go that route, I'll be okay with that.
We're like very big on the metaphors and the similes in today's show. You notice that?
Absolutely. Well, you know, listen, whatever gets us through the next 60 minutes, as I like to say.
Well, we're going another 60 now?
No, we're closing, you know, this shop up today.
Two more calls.
We're getting close to it, I should say.
Let's get through them.
Let's go to Craig in New Jersey. Craig, what's happening?
How you doing, man? My big problem with the Giants is defense. Where this defense was all year, you got the four best defensive ends in football, got no pass rush. We're getting burnt in the secondary. Lovie Smith is on the sideline right now, and Perry Fuel still has a job. My thing is, bring Lovie in, Coughlin goes, we got a head coach, promise Lovie a head coaching job. Lovie's not a bad head coach. Jay Cutler was just a head case.
Okay, but if you bring in Lovie Smith, let's just piggyback off of your hypothetical situation. You're talking about having your third different defensive coordinator in the last 4 or 5 years. Is that good for a team in terms of stability?
Well, Perry Fuel, he's getting nothing done. We have no pass rush. I know we're banged up in the secondary, but, I mean, we gave up the biggest plays yard-wise.
But they were pretty good in points allowed, though.
We're 31st in defense. That is just...
But, Craig, they weren't bad in points allowed. So it was almost that bend-but-don't-break defensive philosophy. Give up a lot of yardage, but keep teams out of the end zone once they get into the red zone.
But I think Craig makes a good point, though, Lance. I think there are a lot of times at the end of these games when you needed the defense to make a play, get the opposing team off the field, and they did have a lot of trouble doing that.
Yes, they did. I mean, I don't think I don't know what happened. I mean, that defense, they didn't gel this year. I mean, they look lost. They look tired. I mean, it looks sickening on half the plays that they gave up. I mean, JPP, what do you have, 5 sacks maybe?
Six and a half.
But he only had two down the stretch.
It's just, you know, OC's gone most likely. So, I mean, that's what we're putting. Justin Tuck, who knows what he got left in the tank? He's been going downhill ever since the first Super Bowl. I mean... I just think that Lovie Smith's on the sideline. It can't hurt.
Craig,
blood in there because Perry Fuel is just – I don't think he's the answer in New York.
Yeah, but, Craig, you know what? You just roll down all these issues with players, with JPP not producing the way he should, Justin Tuck maybe not playing like the player he was back in 2007. I'm not sure you can blame that on the coordinator or the scheme. Isn't it just a matter of those guys beating the player in front of them and making a play?
It didn't seem like they didn't want to be there to play. When they showed up for that Cincinnati game, that defense was just flat. I mean, I've never seen, and ever since then, I mean, they played good against Green Bay. I mean, but that Cincinnati game showed that the team was just tired, flat. They were going on a bye week. I just think a lot of it is the defense. I mean, the getting burnt in the secondary. I know we had injuries, but I mean. I like Lovie Smith. I think he would get a shot here. I mean, you get Perry for one more year, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, Lovie's still sitting on the sideline. You try.
Well, I think Lovie Smith is looking for another head coaching job before he takes a coordinator position. I agree with you. I think Lovie Smith has a great reputation in this league of being a good defensive-minded coach. Clearly, that showed in Chicago. The Bears' defense has been very consistent with the exception of some injuries some seasons. I just don't know, and I understand where you're coming from, Craig, but I agree with John. I don't think you could just point to the scheme as the biggest reason or biggest culprit as to why the defense was not consistent this season. It's partially a responsibility there for the defensive coordinator to make some tweaks as the season progresses, but I think what you're hitting home on is the injuries.
I know, the injury, I mean, you got Corey Webster. I mean, he's been playing this game long enough, and what he did in that Baltimore game, he looked like a lost puppy dog trying to find his way home.
So did Champ Bailey yesterday against the same guy.
We were just talking about that.
You're true. You're true. He did look lost. I guess you got a good point there. Yeah, Champ Bailey did look lost, too. But I just, I, that defense has just been going down. And I mean, now it's like, you know, you got the four teams. I mean, look how many points they scored this past weekend. And look how many scored the week before. It's just, you know what I mean? It's just.
Craig, we hear you. And it's frustrating.
You know?
No, look, you're right. And thanks a lot for the call, man. We appreciate it. Great job, as always. Have a good day. It's just, I know you want to try to find the quick solution. And the easy, quick solution is always change the defensive coordinator. That's the easy one move you can make is, hey, maybe that'll turn everything around and it'll be great. You bring in Lovie Smith, all right? First of all, the whole basis of that Tampa 2 defense is having a middle linebacker that can run deep in coverage and cover people down the field. I'll let you answer your own part of that question. Do you think the Giants have the personnel to do that? I'll let you judge that for yourself. That also means you have to get pass pressure with your front four because you don't blitz a whole lot out of that Tampa 2. You blitz enough, but not a ton. So does this Giant defensive line that couldn't put pressure on the quarterback this year with their front four, can they do it in the Tampa 2 scheme with Lovie Smith? I don't have the answer to that question. There's no guarantee that they can do that. So, look, I think that's the easy way to go about it, try to change the coach. But your best player's got to play better. If you're the Giants, that to me is your answer.
Well, if Giants fans want a little taste of whether or not that defense is effective, they can watch the Dallas Cowboys next season with Monty Kiffin coming into town. And they do have Sean Lee, so maybe they have a good middle linebacker that can fit the prototypical balance of that scheme. But I think when it gets back to the Giants, I think the quick fix, it's easy to say, bring in a new defensive coordinator. But I get back to stability. And I threw out that they, you know, the Giants have had success lately, but remember, they've been through a couple of defensive coordinators because Spags got the head coaching opportunity, then they made the change to bring in Perry Fuel. It hasn't been like the offensive coordinator where Kevin Gilbride's been here for, you know, 8-9 years and they haven't had to change or anything. There's been a lot of movement with respect to the defense, and, you know, sometimes that's a good thing. But other times, when you bring in young guys, that means they've got to learn an entirely new playbook. Even the veterans.
Yep.
You know, it's not just the rookies. The veterans who are used to one system now all of a sudden have to say to themselves, wow, this defensive coordinator is coming in, for example, Lovie Smith. He's not Perry Fuel. He's not talking about being an opportunistic defense. He wants to get down to some different fundamentals. I've got to now be in different positions than I'm used to or that I'm acclimated to in this system. You know, sometimes you need a season or two just to get up to date with a new system. I don't know if that's necessarily the best circumstances that the Giants want to put themselves in right now.
201-939-4513. Final call of the show. Lou G is in Brooklyn. What's up, Lou?
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up, dude?
Quick question.
Sure.
I was just listening to what Craig felt about the Giants' defense situation, and I kind of feel the same as well. Like yesterday, I was watching the New England game, and I'm like, wow, look at Tom Brady. He's going back again now, again. I feel like great teams, good teams, supposed to have good coaching staff. And when you have a good coaching staff, that right there means that you have a good team. You know what I mean? Like, great teams, good teams that go to Super Bowls is because they have good coaching staff.
You mean like the Giants did last year?
Yes. And I see the Giants. Giants are not like a bad team. They're a good team. And it's not the coach. It's not the play. Something is wrong. Something needs to be fixed. And I really don't know what's going on. But maybe we should change the defense coordinator. I don't know. You know, what do you guys think based on that?
Yeah, you know what, Lou? The way you're going about it, it's almost like you're just kind of throwing darts at a dartboard and saying, well, we didn't play well, so, you know, put my hand on my eyes, throw the dart, see whose name it falls on, and then you're going to fire that guy. Quite frankly, it sounds a lot like what Jerry Jones is kind of doing in Dallas right now, going out there and kind of firing Rob
quick
Ryan
fix.
When you're trying to get the quick fix, when really was that Rob Ryan's fault with all those injuries they had on the defensive side of the ball. So the question is, do you want to risk that continuity and that stability, like Lance just mentioned, bringing a new defensive coordinator when the players could play just as poorly under a new system as they are under the old one, and then all of a sudden you're making a switch just for the sake of making a switch that might actually hurt you in the long run if the new coach doesn't do as quite a good of a job as Perry Fuel.
Interesting.
All right, Luke, appreciate the call, man.
And just adding more to this discussion, and we can continue to talk about it tomorrow, look at the four games this weekend, John. The four teams that won, did any of them win because of their defense?
Nope.
Ravens gave up 35 points.
They had the pick, though, in overtime. That turned into the game-winning score.
Niners gave up 31 points.
Packers gave up 45.
Well, but the Packers didn't even win. I'm just talking about the teams that won. The Falcons gave up 28. And even the Patriots gave up 28. So we're not talking about these good teams that are in position to go to the Super Bowl having shut down defenses. They relied more on their offenses yesterday to get them in this position than their defense. And I'm not excusing the Giants' defense. You need game-changing players. You need game-changing schemes. But I don't think we're at a level, even at the elite teams now in the NFL, where they're having a defense that you can rely each and every week to just give up 15 points.
The days of the shutdown, lockdown defense in this league are, I'm not going to say they're over, but they're very hard to come by. Only because all the rules are so much different with the wide receivers, with the hitting in the secondary, helmet to helmet, defensive receiver, all that stuff. It just makes it that much more difficult for a defense to be that lockdown, shutdown type of defense. And you just don't have it as much in the NFL these days. You win by scoring the football.
And the defense certainly needs to improve this offseason for the Giants. But I think the bigger concern for Giants fans should be Eli Manning and company getting back to that 2011 form and do it more consistently, meaning you have the big plays, you have good pass protection, you have a healthy Akiem Nicks, and you are able each and every week to get in that 30 to 35-point barometer. If they are within that range, there's no reason to think that they're not going to be in a position to win football games.
And you're right. You do that by getting Nicks healthy, and most importantly, getting an offensive line in there that can protect Eli Manning, that he has confidence in, so he can step up, throw the ball with good form, and make some plays. That's how you do it. Are you going to try to get your guy from the Houston Chronicle on tomorrow?
Yeah, we'll try to get John McClain on to help review some of these playoff games and look forward to these AFC and NFC championship games.
Should we also get his take on the new Live Free or Die Hard movie?
Perhaps, yes. He could certainly weigh in
John
on
McClain.
That.
John
McClain. Yes, Bruce Willis'
yes,
character.
Thank you.
There
See?
We go. Well, you know, some people may not have picked up on that, clearly here.
Well, Melrose is a little slow. We understand that.
You know, rough weekend. So, you know, we're trying to get everybody back into form for Monday.
I thought that was actually a pretty good line.
I picked up on it very well. So, you know, we'll give you some kudos for that.
All right, I'll happy. Yippee-ki-yay.
Oh, boy. Boy, you're really digging deep for the references today. Any other movie themes you'd like to throw in?
I'm done.
No, you're good. Okay.
Yep.
So we'll try to see if we could get John McClain tomorrow or at least one day later on this week to talk big picture about the NFL, and we'll continue to hit on a lot of Giants offseason news and topics. Fans continue to bring it, which we're certainly appreciative of.
Fans did a great job today.
Absolutely.
Giant fans into it. Watched the games this weekend, making good comparisons to the Giants. Very exciting.
All right.
Wrap the show. Go ahead.
Sounds good. Well, we appreciate the phone calls. Appreciate everybody chiming in. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 9:30 to 10:30. For John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. This is Big Blue Kickoff, brought to you by Andrew Marr.
Have a great day.